check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the NastyCast, we welcome Mike Podhorzer from Fangraphs. We discuss his player projection software, Projecting X 2.0, debate the impact of some player injuries, and take a look at outfielders outside of the top 50. Fantasy jousting?
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. With hashtag Shark Week.
So do you actually balance your checkbook?
So he hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water!
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Episode 110 of the NastyCast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I'm Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. I'm joined today, again, after a one-week hiatus, by a man who relieves stress by feverishly mashing a potato, Van Lee.
That was a lot more PG than I anticipated that statement being, so I appreciate that, first and foremost. Yes, I'm back. This is me, Van Lee, and you can find me on Twitter at Manly Van Lee. I'm not manly, and I'm only barely manly, but it works out anyway.
Do you at least have a van?
Mm-hmm. I need to have like three or four of them, just a fleet that I can just travel around with.
You should. You could fill them with potatoes and relieve a lot of stress by mashing them.
Exactly.
I'm a thinker. I'm just looking out for you, man. But more importantly, we have with us today a man who writes for Fangraphs. He was the 2015 FSWA Raider of the Year, won the inaugural Tout Wars Mixed League back in 2013, and has written and created the ebook Projecting X 2.0, which can be found at projectingx.com. Mike Podhorzer, welcome to the show.
What's up, guys? I heard pretzels and then mashed potatoes, and now I'm hungry, even though I just ate dinner.
And again, reiterate what you had for dinner, because this is really something.
Oh, now everybody will want me to cook them dinner, and I don't do that well. I had a lamb burger, which was delightful, and a side of broccoli and asparagus because I want to try to be healthy.
Is that working? Do you eat that well all the time?
No, I eat whatever I want. I wouldn't say I eat unhealthy. I don't eat healthy. I just kind of eat, I would say, normal, neutral, average. I eat league average. I'm at replacement level.
I have wild swings in my diets if we're going like that. I'm like, who's the least consistent person that you could think of? I'll go on a diet and lose 20 pounds in a month, and then
you're the Justin Upton of eating.
Yeah, there you go. See, I was thinking year over year. That's month. That's much better. That's more accurate. Because and then I will just absolutely, like, if I don't have the energy to go to the gym, I will just completely eat pizza every second day, and that other day in between, it'll be cheeseburgers and Cheetos, and I'll just gain it all right back.
So, I guess I don't understand the problem, but this all sounds great to me.
Yeah, the thing is, you have one life. Eat what you want. We're all going to die anyway.
The eternal optimist, Mike Podhorzer.
I didn't know you had invited Friedrich Nietzsche to be on the show.
Yeah. He's going to be turning our lives inside and out and analyzing them, so this is going to be a deep show. I've brought a lot of tissues just in case I start weeping.
I had no idea what I signed up for, but so far it's starting off swell.
You will regret this shortly. let's see.
Baseball.
Yeah, a little housekeeping to get out of the way. First of all, the podcast league is set. Go to fantasyamateurs.com if you want to get yourself a t-shirt. And again, with pretzels, we'll give you some free pretzels with t-shirt. We are sponsored by Dots Pretzels.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
And you can email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter at fantasyamateurs. And of course, don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. So, like you said, Mike, on to baseball, and we're going to start off with basically what your baby is, what you work on. That's Projecting X 2.0. So first of all, I will say that I am a purchaser of Projecting X, I suppose 1.0 it would be. Maybe 5 years ago or so I bought it, and really I learned a lot from it. I had never, you know, thought to do my own projections or anything. I really learned a lot just from the process of using, you know, the projection system. And I still incorporate a lot of that into my projections every single year. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is exactly and what makes 2.0 better than 1.0?
Sure. So Projecting X describes my methodology of project errors. And really the key here is turning all metrics or all counting stats into a rate. That way you could easily account for playing time changes and project going forward. If a guy had 300 at-bats last year, but you're thinking he's going to have a full-time role this year and he's going to record 600 at-bats. And so that's it's a much easier way to convert home runs, RBIs, and all that jazz into a rate. And that's how best to actually project players. But also another key is to actually separate some of these counting stats into the underlying drivers of the metric. So for example, I don't project home runs specifically. I'm projecting the driving metrics behind home runs, such as home run per fly ball rate, and strikeout rate. And those three metrics combined will then get thrown into a blender and outcomes actual home run projection given how many plate appearances I'm actually projecting. That's similar with batting average. I'm not actually saying, oh, Mike Trout, let's go with 303 this year. That's not how it works. I'm actually projecting strikeout rate, BABIP, and then all those numbers get thrown together and out pops a batting average projection. So that's really the key, is projecting the underlying metrics, because those are a lot more stable than the actual counting stats like batting average. In 2.0, I introduce more rates, because I think in 1.0, I was projecting RBIs and runs scored a little differently, and I came up with a better method to actually project those numbers. I also discuss spring training stats and the incorporation of StatCast and how to project quality starts as well. So it's just more research and improved methodology on how to project players.
Yeah, and that's a must, really. There's so much new stuff that's coming in. You have to incorporate it, and you have to sort of flow with everything new that's coming in. The StatCast stuff is just fascinating to me. But one thing I'm interested in that you mentioned, what really goes into projecting quality starts?
So it really comes down to pitched and ERA, and I actually cannot take credit for the equation. I found it somewhere. I believe it was MrSpreadsheet.com or something. Can't be sure, but it was some other website. I've seen very little research on how to project quality starts, and this is basically the only formula that I've stumbled upon. And it does quite a good job. It's a weird equation. I could not have come up with it because it uses math, lots of math. there's no way that I was able to come up with it. But it's innings pitched, because as you know, you have to go six innings and allow three runs or less. So obviously it's not going to be perfectly accurate. You don't really know the distribution of your innings and your earned runs in those games. But it does a good job. Innings, ERA, and get started are the variables that get put into that formula, and it does a good job. You know, when Clayton Kershaw is at the top, then you know you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and so does it sort of take, I know with a lot of the projections, you sort of take three-year averages and incorporate them into the projections. Does that go into the quality starts as well, as far as determining how, you know, this guy seems to always pitch 180 or 200 innings?
Well, the three-year averages will guide my actual manual projection. So I'm projecting innings pitched, I'm projecting game started. Actually, I'm projecting game started and then innings per start, and then it just multiplies for the innings pitched. So that's what I'm doing. I have the three-year averages calculated. However, I don't necessarily use that exact number. I'll still manually project each metric simply using the three-year averages as a guide, as a starting point.
Okay. And then one other thing that you touched on before we move on. You mentioned incorporating some of the spring training stats that's going on, and I know most people will say to actively avoid spring training altogether, but there is something useful that you you parse out from the stats.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to me because I still can't figure out if people believe that spring training stats mean something or people don't. Because every year you read the same things on Roto World, spring training stats mean nothing. You know, fantasy owners, commenters on Fangraphs, they all kind of agree that they mean nothing. But then when you get to your draft, Michael Franco, for example, went for like $20 when we had that huge spring training last year. And I had him valued at like $8. So it was definite spring training inflation. And you see that during drafts. So you're like, wait a second. I thought we don't believe in spring training stats. So why are these players getting so inflated? So it's like they say one thing, but they do something else, which is just bizarre to me. So I can't figure out what fantasy owners actually believe. But the bottom line is, yes, spring training stats do mean something. However, it's the right spring training stats. Generally, people just look at ERA, batting average. No, those mean absolutely nothing. However, what does potentially mean something are strikeout and walk rates. And they don't mean a whole lot, but I did a research study that followed up on another study that I saw where it does add some incremental value. Basically, if you take your normal projection and then incorporate spring training stats, maybe the spring training stats increase your accuracy by like 5%. So it's not much, but it does have some significance. So every year I look for the spring training strikeout rate surgers on the pitching side and identify a couple of those guys as guys that might enjoy spring full season surges during the year. And then I look back to see how I did. And it's always a mixed bag because it's a small sample of guys. It's like five guys that I actually name. But it is interesting to look at those players as potential breakout guys.
Yeah, you know, I think that the general consensus, they try to block out the spring training stats, they want to, but then when Michael Franco hits 8 or 9 home runs in spring training, they can't help themselves and they, you know, they go in on that. So I think that's they can want whatever they want to, but it's, you know, it's pretty hard to keep that out. But anyway, that's, you know, we're if you go to fantasybaseballsummit.com, you and BJ Pavanka talked about that a lot, like over an hour, and
the stuff in there is,
what's that?
I said, yeah, that was a long video. And you get to see my furry face for over an hour. That's worth the price alone.
Yeah, pretty jealous of your hair, by the way, as a man who's partially bald. But anyway, yeah, we'll link to the Fantasy Baseball Summit in the show notes as well. Of course, I was a part of that, but Mike's masterclass, as they called it, on the projections is just fantastic, so go check that out. But we've got a lot of other fish to fry here, so we are going to move on into the news.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
And the first thing that we are going to discuss here, it's sort of old news at this point, but hey, this is only a weekly podcast. So Houston Street, he has suffered a grade 1 lat strain. So Mike, we will start with you. Who is your candidate to close in Anaheim now?
Well, you figure it's got to be Cam Bedrosian. I mean, he's been the closer of the future. He's dealing with an injury himself, but it doesn't seem as serious as Houston Street. Bedrosian has got the underlying skills, whereas Street has basically been the incumbent and was terrible last year until he got injured. So you wonder what's going to happen here. Is Houston Street going to get Wally Pipped? And is he going to have a job when he comes back? What if Bedrosian has locked down 5 saves and hasn't given up a run? Is Street going to still take over the job? I don't know. I really don't know. Street was injured last year, so I wonder if that affected his performance because he was really terrible. And up until last year, he had been very consistently good. So I don't know. And Bedrosian is really good, though. So if he got the job, I think he could hold on to it all season long if Street doesn't come back and reclaim the job that had been his.
Van, what do you think?
Well, and obviously I'm an Angels fan here, so I've kind of followed the team pretty closely. And if this were maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I would say Andrew Bailey 100%, because that's what Shosha does. He hates young kids. He struggles to give the ball to the rookies and go on and so forth like that. However, since DePoto has left the organization, I think they kind of reined in a little bit of the Shosha crazy old man stuff. So I really do think Bedrosian takes the job and keeps it. And I think Street's going to be out for long enough that if Bedrosian pitches well, and he should, because you know, as we've said, he's got the underlying skill. He's a really good pitcher. If he's healthy, I think he keeps the job all year. So I'm really kind of putting all my eggs in that basket and leaning on Bedrosian here.
Yeah, I can't argue. Obviously, Bedrosian has the best skills of the group. You always got to worry that they're going to do something really dumb and put Andrew Bailey in there. His numbers last year, not great, and obviously Houston Street's not great either. And it seems like just a matter of time whenever Street does get back, you know, before he gets hurt again. And even last year, he didn't perform very well. So I'm with you guys. I'm just going Bedrosian. I'm not even going to draft Street anywhere. So our next injury update here, this got progressively worse as news kept coming out. It's David Dahl with the Rockies. He is now likely to begin the season on the disabled list. So, Mike, you talked about with your projections, you incorporate your own playing time projections. So with David Dahl missing, you know, perhaps substantial time into the season, how does that affect the Rockies outfield?
So obviously I have to bring down my David Dahl playing time projection. That's going to open up potentially playing time for Gerardo Parra. I think Mark Reynolds will be in the lineup a little more often as well. And Parra is a guy that I think a lot of people were excited about last year in his first year in Colorado, but he was terrible. He only posted a 284 wOBA, was easily a career worst mark. He batted 253, another career worst. Showed a bit of home run power. Stole six bases as well. So he did show that power-speed combination that people were excited about in moving to Colorado. But he rarely walked. He struck out at a career-high pace. And it was a complete disaster. But he's still young. He's still only 29 years old. And I think that if he gets some playing time early on, I think he could be a nice investment in NL-only leagues. So I would definitely speculate on him. He probably will come cheaply. And I think Dahl was actually massively overvalued. I think he was one of the most overvalued players in drafts so far this year. I think people just completely ignored his playing time situation, the fact that he's a lefty, he might not play against lefties. There was even a minor chance he'd open the year at AAA. I mean, I don't believe he had much time. I'm bringing it up now, but yeah, he only had 68 plate appearances in his entire career at AAA. So it's possible that he's just not ready and pitchers adjust. So I think it was absurd that he was going inside the top 100, and I was avoiding him, but now he's going to be cheaper because of the injury.
Yes, so that's up the next point. Van, are you still drafting David Dahl with this injury?
It's going to depend heavily on where he's falling to. I very much agree that he was very overrated coming into this year. With the injury, I think it's okay. In a redraft league, I don't know. I'm kind of wary of that. In a dynasty, I still like him because I think he's a really good hitter. And I think there's some future value there. However, the one thing I do want to point out is that when he had his horrible collision and had to have his spleen removed and everything, there was a whole lot of talk about how that may affect his durability long term, as in maybe he can't play as many games in a season. So that was kind of my concern with him after that injury, and that still may not be settled for me. So I think if I'm going to project David Dahl going forward, even in a perfect year, I think I'm only going to look at maybe 145 games. They may be 145 good games, but he's, to me, not going to be your 162 game, you know, Iron Man going through. So I'll take him if the price is right, but I highly doubt, even with this injury news, that the price will be right.
Yeah, he is kind of shaping up to be one of those injury-prone guys. It's unfortunate, but yeah, and I think, like you said, if there's a big enough disc, I'll still invest, but I really hate investing in guys that are already injured coming into the year, and especially like you were alluding to, Mike, that just you know, really don't have that much of a track record, even at AAA. So they could really start him, you know, once he comes back, they could work him in easy just at AAA before he even goes back to the majors. So that makes Parra even more interesting. And one more note before we move on to the next segment. David Price, it turns out he's not having Tommy John surgery, which was a blessing since our last podcast. We were pretty much all doom and gloom. But to be honest, this isn't really changing where I'm drafting him at all. I'm still avoiding him. Like, he's still scary to me. And I still like Eduardo Rodriguez. So honestly, like, even with this good news, it's not changing much for me.
Yeah, I don't think I would take him until I get into the double-digit rounds. And he's not going to last that long. So I agree. No thanks on David Price. Hopefully for Boston's sake, he pitches, and hopefully for his sake, he pitches well. but no thanks for me. I think pitching is too rich anymore that it's just not worth taking that dive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you both as well. I took down my innings projection for Price, and wherever that brings him value-wise, he'll probably still go for a little more. There's got to be one owner that believes, oh, he'll be okay. And I don't really invest in top-tier pitching to begin with. So even if he was healthy, even without the scare, I was probably not going to end up rostering David Price this year anyway. So this is just a double confirmation that he's not going to end up anywhere near any of my team's rosters.
Very good. All right. With that, we will move on to ADP Wars.
Oh, no, no, no. I think you missed the most important news story, Nathan.
Oh, really? What is that, Ben?
And that is that Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez are reportedly dating now. So what? Kind of a big deal.
Oh, my God.
Jenny from the block, huh?
Yeah. Don't be fooled by the rocks that she's got.
You know what I heard about her, though, is her hips do lie. I just don't like that.
That's a
well,
shame.
Then A-Rod and J-Lo have something in common because A-Rod was quite the liar himself.
Oh.
And he has bad hips.
This is very true. They're meant for each other.
They're the perfect couple. Oh, great. Well, I can't wait to see their soon-to-be on TLC or some shit, their reality show. That should be a lot of fun. They're going to have twins or something. Anyway, okay, now we'll move on to AP Wars. So our exercise here, Mike, is we're going to take similarly positioned ADP. I know you said that you don't pay too much attention. You try to block what the general public is doing. But this is exactly the opposite of that. We are taking what the exact public is doing pitting to these two similarly grouped players against each other. Basically, who would you rather draft? And these guys are going off the board at picks 195 and 196, and that is Kevin Kiermaier and Jock Peterson. And I should mention off the bat, all of these outfielders that we were going to be talking about are outside the top 50 since we focused on the top 50 last week. So these are all deeper league guys. And so we're starting near 200 ADP, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. So Mike, anyway, between Kiermaier and Peterson, which way are you going?
See, it's a good thing I actually have early dollar values calculated so I can directly compare these players. And there's actually a $6.5 difference in my values between these two players. And I'm going to throw it out to you guys. Who do you think I have valued $6.5 more than the other?
I'm going to assume Peterson.
Is in a standard 5x5?
In a standard 12-team 5x5 with five outfielders.
Oh, man. With the steals, I would probably say Kiermaier.
It is Kiermaier, indeed.
Wow.
And that probably surprises people. I feel like I value Kiermaier a bit higher than most, which surprises me that I didn't actually draft him in labor mixed. But I know he was at the top of my board for a while. It just didn't make sense for me to draft him. But, yeah, I got him worth nearly $10, whereas Jock Peterson only $3 and change. And it's the steals. It's the fact that Jock Peterson's going to kill you in batting average. I'm assuming that once again he's going to be hitting in the bottom of the order, which is not really going to be very good for his RBI and run production, whereas Kiermaier's typically going to be at the top of the order. Plus, Kiermaier still does have some power, so it's not like Peterson's going to crush him in that category.
Indeed. Go ahead, Van. What do you say between these two?
Yeah, at this point in the draft, I mean, we're looking at near picks 200 here. I get everything you're saying about Kiermaier. However, I think the ceiling is far, 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 far lower than Peterson. I don't think Peterson gets to that ceiling, but if he does, you're going to get tremendous more value out of Peterson. So I'm going to lean Peterson on this. I get the steals, but also with our ADP wars, as you'll see, a lot of these guys that we're going to talk about today can provide steals. So maybe it's not as awful and hard to find steals as I kind of thought it was earlier based on the sheet I'm looking at here. So I'm going to lean Peterson on this one.
Interesting. You know, I think a lot of that the talk about stolen bases being down is also a little bit in comparison to the power spikes, since home runs are so much more plentiful now than they used to be. So there's also, you know, there's fewer stolen bases to go around, but especially in comparison directly to home runs, like, it just makes it that much worse. And I do have Kiermaier here. I have my 43rd outfielder, which is considerably higher than the consensus ADP. He's been sort of one of my sleeper guys coming into the year, so I'm going to side with Mike here. Although I will say, 25% pop-up rate, by far the worst in MLB. If you look at a minimum of 400 plate appearances, because he missed some time last year. But that absolutely kills his BABIP. So that's something that I really hope he can correct and, you know, put some more balls into play as opposed to just automatic outs, basically. You know, if you need power, then obviously I would say Peterson would be the way to go. 75% contact rate is up quite a bit. It was 66.7% in 2015. So that is really encouraging to me. And he's still just 25. You know, so I think that is the kind of improvement that you want to see from a budding hitter like that. And he definitely gets a boost in OBP leagues, you know, for whatever that's worth. But I still like the five-category production from Kiermaier. He really came on last year, so that's the way I'm leaning.
And I'd just like to note that there was an article a couple of weeks ago by Travis Sawchick on Fangraphs titled "Kevin Kiermaier, comma, breakout candidate." Thank you very much.
There you go.
All right. I should have read that.
I did not see one that said Jock Peterson, comma, breakout candidate, but perhaps, Van, you can pen one and we'll post it.
It's on my list now. I'll be working on it as soon as we're done here.
Very good. All right, we'll move on to our next matchup here, and that is sophomore Nomar Mazara taking on Keon Broxton. Mazara going on average 205.7, and Keon Broxton basically the same at 206. So, Van, we shall start with you here. Who are you drafting?
It's funny. I was reading through this and getting ready to rank and do all my stuff, and I saw these two names, and I thought, no way. There's no way that I would take Broxton over Mazara. And then I started looking at the numbers, and for whatever reason, in my head, Mazara had a far better season than he actually did. So once I've kind of done some delving and checked out some of the numbers and underlying numbers, it basically comes down to this for me. If it's a redraft league, I'm going to go with Keon Broxton. However, he's 27. He's a non-prospect, basically. He's a little bit old. He can walk at a decent amount, so his stolen base opportunities are going to be good, and he's going to steal a lot. However, long-term, Mazara is, 21, 22? I think he's the answer. So it depends on your format. But this year, I'm definitely going to take Broxton in this pick.
Yeah, this, for me, I wrote down Mazara here, and I disagree with myself. Because, Mazara is just 21. So absolutely, in Dynasty Leagues, I'm definitely going Mazara all the way here. But, you know, he had a really hot start, and then he was kind of meh for the rest of the year, just really not impressive. I mean, for a 21-year-old,
no steals.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he's fine. You know, it's a good lineup, you know, so that will help in everything. But Keon Broxton, definitely the boom-bustier out of the two. Like, if you're just going with a floor guy, definitely Mazara for me, because Broxton could be in AAA after a month. That's his floor, but his upside is huge, and especially in an OBP league, I really like Broxton. He walked 14% of the time last year, and his hard contact, 43.3% last year. He had the fourth best average exit velocity via StatCast, 95 miles an hour. He just hit the snot out of the ball when he did make contact, but he didn't make contact a lot. He whiffed 36% strikeouts last year or so. Also, like you said, with the steals, 23 steals in 75 games last year, and we're well aware of how much Milwaukee likes to run. They're very, very, they just let everybody fly basically on the bases, and I don't really see that changing this year. So Broxton at least going to give you a lot of steals if he has the playing time. So that's where I'm going. But Mike, this is an interesting case, especially in Keon Broxton. I think he's been one of the biggest sort of sleepery guys. I don't think he's even a sleeper anymore, because I'm pretty sure we're the last fantasy baseball podcast to bring his name up. So at this point, he's got a ton of buzz. So which way are you leaning here?
This is actually an 8 difference between hitters, and Broxton for me is on top by that $8. So he kind of came out of nowhere last year, and he struck out a ton, but he offered that power and that speed and a highly inflated BABIP. But that BABIP was kind of deserved. I actually published an ex-BABIP equation that accounts for shifts earlier in the year. It can be found on Fangraphs. And ex-BABIP suggests that his actual BABIP should have been like 380 and change, and I think in reality it was like 370. So he legitimately earned that really high BABIP, because he's got the speed, he's got the power, he hits the ball hard, he avoids pop-ups, and he doesn't get shifted. And that's all the keys to posting a high BABIP. Now, is it repeatable? I have no idea. This is the first year. We have very little major league data on Broxton, so I don't know. But even assuming major regression, he's still a teens home run guy. He should still steal 30-plus bases. He's still in a hitter's ballpark, and the team wants him to bat at the top of the order, which is probably going to be second behind VR, and that's a really, really good spot. So this is an easy call. I think Mazzara is overrated. I think it's because he's got this prospect hype that his numbers have never been that great, but just because he's young – guys just expect him to break out, but he hasn't really hinted at that coming anytime soon. So right now he's a guy who doesn't really steal, and he's just not going to really be above average in any particular category.
Absolutely. I love all that next level stuff, man. That gets my blood pumping. I love hearing all that expected BABIP and everything. And that's something, you know, that we mentioned earlier with the projections and involving Statcast and everything, you know, the hard hit, soft hit, medium hit metrics and everything. All of that really is huge as far as determining BABIP. We always used to say 300 is league average no matter what, and that's just not the case. It's very important to factor that stuff in, especially with guys like Keon Broxton, just very interesting cases. But we'll move on to the next matchup that I will start off with, and that is Jacoby Ellsbury versus Jared Dyson. They're both going off the board at 248. And I would rather probably just punch myself in the dick than draft either one of these guys because I don't like either one of them, really. But I'm going Dyson, not by much, just because I think Ellsbury is, you know, he's pretty liable to get hurt. He's probably not going to hit 10 home runs. He doesn't even steal very much anymore. And Dyson, while he's still really bad against lefties, I think full-time at-bats are probably not the best thing for his fantasy value. 269 career wOBA against lefties, not good, but he is at least going to steal a lot of bases, and that's more than I think we can say about Jacoby Ellsbury. So I'll go Dice, but Mike, what about you? What do you say?
I'm going to go Ellsbury, but it really comes down to how often you expect Dyson to play. And again, just like last year, he's coming into the season where we're all thinking, huh, he might actually play full time this year. But here's this. The guy is 32 years old. He's never amassed more than 337 plate appearances. How many 32-year-olds, after spending years in the league as a part-timer, how many of them suddenly have career highs in plate appearances, play full time, and reach 500 plate appearances? Rare. I mean, I don't have a list in front of me, but I'm sure that's a very rare occurrence. So I can't imagine that he actually played full time all season long. This is exactly what happened last year. Obviously, it's a new team, but it happened last year. He did not play full time. I'm sure the same thing is going to happen again. He's not good versus left-handers. He has no power. He's a good pinch runner. He's fantastic defensively, but he's really not much of a hitter. And so I'm not projecting a full-time play. I think Ellsbury is definitely safer. He'll give you some power. He'll give you the 20 steals. And Dyson is really, you get your 20 to 30 steals, and that's basically it.
All right, we got a tighter break here, Van.
Well, I am going to break it, obviously. So I'm going to lean on Dyson here, and that's simply because I really have no interest in either one of these players, to be frank. But Jacoby Ellsbury, I'm done with him. The power is not there. The steals are waning. He's 33. He's got a really bad injury history. I'm just done. Could he break out? Well, I don't say break out. Could he provide really good value? Sure. It's just not going to happen for me because I'm not going to waste the roster spot on him. At least the one thing I can say about Dyson is, hey, he's going to steal some bases. I'm going to treat like I used to treat Ben Revere a few years ago. Put him on your team, throw him in there when you want to get a couple stolen bases, and then put him on your bench when you're done with him.
Do you guys remember back in 2011 when Ellsbury hit 32 home runs?
Barely, yes.
Yeah. Wasn't that something?
What? Oh, that was the same thing that happened to Chase Headley, where every year following, you're like, so when is he going to rediscover that stroke?
Yeah, oh, well, as a Twins fan, Mike, I'm well aware of Joe Mauer's 29 home runs, I believe.
Oh, we should throw him into that group. He's got the same guy that I wonder what happened that one year when they never again came anywhere close to that kind of power.
Yeah, and we've been paying for that ever since.
The Yankees and everyone else who's signed these guys.
Yeah, at least the Yankees have money to throw around.
True.
So our next one, let's see, we got Manny Margot, 288 versus Michael Conforto, some younger guys here. He's going at 292. So, Mike, we shall start with you here. Which one of these two guys are you drafting?
This is an easy call, and I'm not really sure why the two are so close, because Margot probably has a full-time job, whereas Conforto 100% doesn't. So I don't really see how this has happened. I like Conforto if he had a full-time job, but he doesn't. Unless they make a trade or if Lucas Duda is severely injured and opens the year on the disabled list, I don't really see the path to playing time for Conforto. Margot has some speed, a couple of home runs. Not really too exciting, but he could give you 20 steals in a full-time role. Conforto just – he's not going to play. So it's an easy decision in my eyes.
Yeah, the Mets are trying to make Conforto happen, or at least Mets fans are, or maybe just the fantasy community. Ben, what do you think?
Well, I question too. You said Margot has a clear job here. Does he? Are they committed to playing him? Are they going to put him in the minors? Because if I'm the Padres, I have no interest in playing him until, you know, a couple months into the season. That's my first question.
Yeah, I thought they were. And I was under the assumption that Alex Dickerson would open the year as a fourth outfielder, but he's perfectly capable to be in a starting role. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, he has the talent to do it. Here's where it's kind of a toss-up for me. Well, in that regard right there, I think Conforto could and potentially will be a really good hitter. However, the Mets are doing everything they can to screw that kid up. They wouldn't play him against lefties. When they sent him to the minors last year, the minors coach wouldn't play against lefties. It was just a whole train wreck. I don't necessarily think that's going to be fixed this year because the Mets have shown that they're not willing to do what they need to do for it. However, in the future, I think Conforto could blossom into a really good hitter and become really valuable. I think right now, if you put me on the spot and say, well, who's a better hitter and who's likely to contribute more, it's going to be Margot if he has the job. That would be my big thing. So for me, I'm going to take Margot. However, it's just completely going to depend on how that playing time out. If the Padres decide they're going to send him down for a few months, and if he slightly struggles and they keep him down even longer, then obviously you're not going to get any value out of him. However, if Conforto starts out strong, there's an injury, the Mets get their heads out of their butts, then he's got any time, and I think he could blossom and become a really good hitter too.
Yeah, I mean, Conforto is just kind of blocked. I mean, Granderson, Cespedes, Jay Bruce. The Mets tried to shop Jay Bruce. Nobody was taking him this offseason. So Conforto is just kind of screwed for now. I do think that he still has a bright future. I'd be holding on to him in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues. 40% hard contact rate last year, 45% fly balls as well. That could lead to a lot of power down the road. But again, just not good against lefties. Margot, I think, does have the job. That's the I've been operating under that assumption to this point. I think, like you said, Mike, as far as Alex Dickerson coming off the bench, you know, you'll see a lot of moving around, I think, with these guys as they sort of try and figure out what they've got. But I think Margot, with his defense, and the table-setting ability, I think that'll play pretty well in that lineup. And, you know, he's just a guy who puts the ball in play. Only 11% strikeout rate at AAA last year. So he's going to get to first. He's going to steal. And, it's an obvious one, I think, like we said at this point. Conforto just doesn't have the playing time right now. He doesn't deserve to be being drafted this highly. But we shall move on to our last matchup in the ADP wars for this week, and that is going to be Tyler Naquin against Travis Jankowski, sticking in the outfield there with the Padres. So, Van, we shall start with you on this one. Who are you drafting?
I'm actually going to go with Jankowski on this one. I think he's got a little more upside. Napkin, that's what I'm going to go with.
Napkin, yeah.
He kind of came out of nowhere. I thought of him in his career arc of being the ultimate fourth outfielder, has a little bit of talent here and there, and then he just kind of exploded on the scene. I don't necessarily believe all of it, so I'm kind of wary of him. However, Jankowski did virtually everything right last year, made some gains in the power department, made some gains in getting it on base a little bit better rate. So I kind of like him here, and I think, honestly, this is probably a little bit later than he could provide value for. I think he could probably go 50 picks earlier and still provide value at that point.
I do like Jankowski here, too. I actually traded for him in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League last year just because I needed some speed. And now, at this point, it seems like I have a plethora of speed and not enough power. I might be looking to trade him away.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes.
But anyway, yeah, I'm going to go with Jankowski here. It's really weird looking at what Naquin did, and he's sort of a Keon Broxton-y type in that he just whiffs a lot, 30% strikeout rate. Needed a 411 BABIP to hit 296, but a 38% hard contact rate goes a long way towards an elevated BABIP, as we've mentioned before. 91.5 mile an hour average exit velocity off Naquin's bat last year, but 14% swinging strikes and 72% contact rate. Very ugly, but one thing that I'm noticing, you know, and Mike, you can speak to this better than I can, but it seems like just most of the power hitters, well, maybe not most, but a lot of the power hitters these days, you see that, like just a ton of swinging strikes, but then whenever they do make contact, like they don't care about not making contact. They just want to hit the home runs because when they do connect, it goes a long ways.
Yeah, one of the things I look at for power spikes is, does it seem like they're selling out for power? Are they swinging and missing a lot more, and that's paired with an increase in power? And you do see that a lot, which makes me think that it was a conscious change in approach rather than just a fluke. And it seems like potentially for Naquin, because he didn't strike out at crazy rates in the minors, but nearly 31% of the time last year, and that crazy power that he never showed in the minors. So like you said, Nathan, this was a weird year for Naquin. The 411 BABIP, a home run per fly ball rate over 20%, almost 31% strikeout rate. I am not a fan at all. He's also a lefty. He's probably not going to face lefties. There's a real chance that he just collapses, falls on his face, and he just finds himself back in the minors. So I'm definitely going Jankowski. I think he's undervalued for sure. And I like him as a player. Great defensively, which will keep him in the lineup. He gets on base at a good clip because he walks. He doesn't strike out too much. And I think he'll stay at the top of the Padres lineup. The only issue is that he has absolutely no power. So his overall offensive production in real baseball is not very good. But his defense is good enough to keep him in the lineup.
Yeah, and that, I mean, the spot in the lineup, you know, if you look at roster resource with the Indians, Naquin, start the season, he's projected to hit ninth in the lineup, whereas Jankowski is slated to lead off. So a huge difference as far as runs and RBI, in those positions. Although, like you said, Mike, I mean, both of them are probably going to sit against lefties. Jankowski last year, granted, it was only 84 at-bats, so obviously incredibly small sample size, but his WRC plus was 11. That's not good.
No.
So he's probably not going to play against lefties, for whatever that's worth.
And one quick stat here I want to throw out for Tyler Naquin, 56% stolen base percentage. That is horrible.
Yeah, that's not going to get you the green light. So let's see. We're going to take a quick break and then come back with our targets.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
Target acquired.
Alrighty, we have returned on the nastiest of casts, and we're going to look at some guys that we really like their value, outfielders outside the top 50. So, Mike, we shall start with you. What are your favorite buys outside of the top 50 at outfield this year?
Favorite buys outside the top 50 would definitely be names like Mitch Haniger in Seattle. So this is going to be his first full-time opportunity. He's got power. He's got a bit of speed. And he's going to play. And nobody really knows his name. He came over from Arizona last year. But he's in Seattle right now. And I think he's probably going to get a little more expensive as spring progresses, just as people know that he's probably going to have a full-time job. And he's the kind of guy that I like. The potential upside for 20 and 10, not a big standout in any one category, but he does enough in all categories that it adds up to solid value.
I'm really glad you brought him up because he's one of the more interesting guys this year, you know, finding a new home out in Seattle. You know, an older prospect, he's 26 now, so that I've been kind of on the fence, so this is making me lean pro Haniger. Because last year he flashed really well, nice plate discipline. He walked a lot in the minors.
You know, good batting average, good OBP throughout the minor leagues. You know, but he's 26, you know, and he's just getting up now. So it seems like almost a little bit of a I believe in the minor leagues, those are all that's in the PCL as well, which is a very hitter heavy, hitter friendly as well. So that sort of is you know, made me cautious that it might be a little bit of smoke and mirrors as far as the minor league numbers. But if you believe in that, that helps push me over the edge. So maybe I'll be looking at him, you know, a little bit later.
But he's going to come so cheap that.
Yeah,
you don't need a huge season. I'm only projecting 17 home runs and 7 steals, which isn't thrilling. But as a last outfielder to do a little of everything, I think that's the type of guy that you speculate on with your last buck or with your last roster spot in a draft.
Excellent. All right, Van, what about you?
Well, I've got a couple names I'll throw out there for you. Outside of the top 50, Carlos Gomez is going right around 55. I don't necessarily know that – well, I know that he's not going to get back to being the Gomez he used to be, but he still has a lot of tools, as we saw in the second half last year. And, I mean, this was a guy who's a top 10 outfielder for a long while – well, for several years. So hopefully he's back to where he used to be. And I think if he parlays that second half value into a full season, you're going to get some good value out of it. Max Kepler is going 71, your Twinkie there. I think he was overvalued going in last year, but he made some decent strides. He can give you some home runs. He can steal a little bit. The only question for me, as always with kids like this, is can they hit left-handers? Right now, he was kind of sketchy about it. But if he grows in that department, there, yeah, I mean, you have a potential superstar on your hands. And then finally, at pick 90, I have Josh Reddick moving to Houston out of Oakland. Will help his power a little bit. If he's healthy, I mean, you've got 20 home runs. I think he'll give you a solid average, decent OBP, and he's in a good lineup, so he should score some runs and drive in some runs.
Yeah, I like Kepler. One guy that I wanted to, you know, round back to is Carlos Gomez. You know, September OPS 986. The rest of the year he just sucked. I don't think I'm buying it. I think I'm just going to let him go. I mean, he's obviously cheap enough where if you believe in it, then it's absolutely worth the investment. But I'm interested in your thoughts, Mike, on a Carlos Gomez rebound.
I actually meant to draft Carlos Gomez in the Labor Mix League, and I screwed up. It was my bad, and that's how I ended up with Keon Broxton. But he's a guy that at his price, I think it's definitely worth the price. And do I know if he's going to rebound? No, but he still does have power. He still does have speed. He's in a great ballpark and a good lineup. He's going to play every day. So given where he's going, I think he's definitely – worth it and a good risk reward, but I think most fantasy owners have essentially given up on him given poor performance and injuries. But I did want to quibble both of you guys like Max Kepler, and I actually think that Max Kepler is a guy to avoid at his price. I think his power was a fluke. I think his batted ball profile suggests that his batting average is not going to jump. And he's just kind of a replacement level outfielder for me. And I don't think he's very excited.
How dare you?
I think patience should be used here. Does it happen this year? Maybe not. He's still pretty young. However, based on, again, pick 71 in the outfield, I think it's fine enough to take the chance here. So I don't know. I think he could provide some really good value.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not over the moon for him, but I like you said, Van, I think I'm okay with where he's going in drafts. You know, not – will he hit 20 home runs? Probably not. Will he steal bases? Probably not. You know, so he's not very exciting. And we saw him really fail to adjust to pitching at certain points last year. But, you know, he's 24, and his overall numbers ended up pretty decent. You know, almost a 10% walk rate, whatever that's worth. I mean, Mike, take it easy on my Twins. That's about as good a player as can muster right now.
Well, I will say that I'm now comparing my projections to the systems on Fangraphs, Steamer, the Fans, and Zips. And I'm easily the most bearish of all of them.
Okay.
So that could mean that I'm an idiot, or that could mean because I'm using stats that the other systems aren't using, which I am, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's correct. Because I'm using my ex-BABIP, I'm looking at the stat cast for my ex-home run per fly ball rate, and those numbers are not kind to Kepler, and I know those are not being factored into the projections that are on Fangraphs right now. So in this case, I'm really curious to see which system ends up correct since I'm on the other side of the rest of them.
Well, does your system factor in the fact that the Twins are notorious for just ruining everything? because that could be a big factor.
Come on. Jeez. twist the knife, why don't you? Yeah, no, it's been rough. So I guess every time Max Kepler hits a home run, Mike, I'll just tweet at you. How's that sound? I'll just send you the article. My guys, we actually touched on two of the guys that I really like their values this year, Kiermaier and Jankowski. I think I'm going to end up with those guys in a lot of my drafts, in deeper leagues anyway, with Jankowski. But one more guy that I wanted to mention is Shin Soo-Chu, who is right now going so, so late. The 81st outfielder off the board, 325 overall. You know, we're talking down with the guys like Jankowski, but, you know, Naquin, like those guys we talked about before. Obviously had a pretty rough go of it last year, barely saw the field. But when he did, he played really well, just, you know, right in line with where he was before. He actually was 6 of 9 for stolen bases in just 48 games, so the wheels are still somewhat there. Obviously, probably not a great stolen base percentage there if you play in one of those weird net stolen base leagues. But I think he's going to hit second in that order, and he's great at getting on base. You could be looking at a ton of runs scored there. So I think some sneaky value with Shin Soo-Chu, and he's going so late that if he gets hurt again, which he is wont to do, then you're really not killing your team by rostering him.
Yeah, I actually agree with Chu, and especially in the OBP leagues where his value gets a nice boost as well.
Yes. So let's put the proverbial glove on the other hand, I guess, as it were, to make up some kind of terrible metaphor. We're going to hate on some guys right now. We're going to look at some guys to avoid. All right, and Mike Weef, we'll start with you again, being our guest of honor. So one guy that you're just not interested in drafting this year, or multiple guys if you feel like hating on several dudes.
Well, here's the answer that nobody wants to hear, and that is I don't avoid anybody because everybody's got a price. So unless I am valuing them in negative territory, then there's a price that's right for everybody. Now, I'll throw out a name that I think is overvalued, and that's Yasiel Puig. I think people are still expecting him to have that year and still holding out hope for his debut year, but he hasn't shown us any evidence of that thing back. His whole batted ball profile is a mess. He's not expected to hit in a great lineup spot to open the season. So could it happen? Sure. It's clear that he's got some physical skills, but you can't project that and you certainly can't pay for that. So he's the type of guy that speculate on late, like a Mitch Haniger, and for cheap. But when he's not going cheap, then you're already paying for half of the rebound. And that's silly. That's not how you win fantasy baseball.
Mike, I ranked 125 outfielders, and the one guy that I wrote down as an avoid was Yasiel Puig. So we are in lockstep. He is going off the board as the 58th outfielder, a pick 216. Around the likes of Carlos Gomez, for one, Hunter Renfroe, Eric Thames, Kevin Kiermaier. He's going before Kiermaier. So
I'd rather have all those guys that you named.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a fourth outfielder at this point. I mean, there's not a lot of fantasy goodness to be gleaned, and I don't know if he can make the adjustments. I'm certainly not willing to pay for him to sit around and make those adjustments. So, okay, we're both out on Puig. So, Van, wrap us up. Who are you avoiding?
The one thing I do want to mention about Puig, though, my favorite thing about it is if you go to the FanGraphs section on him and you look at his ratings on the 80 grade scale, he's got like an 80 across the board and, again, is just a terrible baseball player right now. I have no interest in him, so I agree with you on that. The two names I'm going to throw out here, Randall Grichuk is going right around pick 57 for outfielders, and I have no interest in that. He does have legit power, I think, and kind of put that in the book. But that really hot finish last year kind of masks the overall mediocrity of all of it. He's got a bad contact percentage. He doesn't walk. I just no thanks. I don't have any interest in him that high.
Yeah,
and then another one. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we were talking about Tyler Naquin before. He's another Tyler Naquin. Like, just doesn't make contact at all. Yep. He just hits home runs, and that's it. He doesn't care about anything else.
Yeah, exactly. And then another guy I've got who's going around pick 78 for outfielders that I have no interest in is Josh Bell. I think he's kind of gotten some love, but for a guy who's, 7'8" or whatever he is, he has no power based on what he should do. He doesn't really do anything exceptional. He doesn't walk all that well. He has, like I said, he has the less power. Some people are projecting a breakout maybe. I just don't see it happening. I think if he achieves what he can achieve, it's going to be the most boring, bland, vanilla line out there. And that's just not a guy I want at this pick. I'd rather have someone who can give me some really good value or, you know, explosive breakout, that sort of thing.
I want to throw out a name just because you're a Twins fan. Let's talk Byron Buxton, because I think based on his September, I'm getting really tired of hearing about his September that was propped up by a ridiculous BABIP. He was still striking out over 30% of the time, and people are loving him. I'm like, really? The guy's going to bat at the bottom of the order, of a not a great batting order, and sure, he's going to provide some power, some speed as well, but he's also going to kill your batting average. And at his price, I just don't get it. I mean, I do understand why people are paying for him, but I think it's absurd.
Yeah, you said it, man. I've actually been throwing cold water on several people who have asked me about Byron Buxton. Yeah, it's a little bit rude, you know. It was in vogue a couple years ago, right? That bucket challenge.
Oh gosh,
I could just blame it on that. I'll pretend it's coming around again. But yeah, no, I've been saying the exact same thing. Like even in that September, he was still striking out 33% of the time, and that is something that needs to come a long ways before he's going to be able to get on base at a decent enough clip. The Twins have said that they want him to lead off, but I think that depends a lot on honestly how he performs in spring training. As unfortunate as that is, but I don't think he's ready to cut it yet. He strikes out too much. He doesn't get on base enough. His play discipline has a long, long ways to go. And once he does get on base, obviously he's got the wheels to fly. I mean, he only stole 10 bases last year at the major league level. I guess it looks like 17 for the entire year. So as fast as he is, he's not even stealing that much. I think maybe he's just waiting to get more used to the pitching, get more comfortable up there before he decides that he's going to worry about stealing bases as well. He's got just the plain raw speed to steal a ton of bases. So, you know, people are still dreaming on him. It wasn't that long ago when he was the number one prospect in baseball. But, you know, people forget that he's still just 23 years old. He missed a lot of time in the minors with injuries. He's been a guy who's constantly been nicked up. So I'm still in on him long term. But, yeah, this year I've been – trying not to buy into the hype. I think when it gets down to a certain point, I could be interested, especially if I'm looking at someone that, you know, gives me some ups. Especially in a shallow league, like if I draft him and he's not in a position to really hurt my team, I can just sort of draft him as more of a lottery ticket, then I'm interested. But otherwise, I would be very cautious of spending too much on Buxton.
Yeah, and I want to make a point about Buxton here. I've said this a lot, and I like to say it because I want to be on record for it if it actually happens. And actually, if you've done any new Dynasty redrafts this year, he's still getting way more love than he deserves. I think he has a lot of talent, but we'll see. But for me, the career arc I can kind of see going with him based on his talent level and what he does well is a lot like Lorenzo Cain, who, again, was a top prospect, had a lot of just absolute tools, and it just took a while to come together. And then once it did, he was really, really good. So Buxton's young and doesn't take as long as it took Kane to get in there. Maybe it's 26, 27, but I don't foresee him putting it all together until he gets just a little bit older.
But the difference, of course, is the strikeout rate. Kane's highest career strikeout rate in the majors is only 23%. Buxton would kill to have a strikeout that low.
Sure.
Yeah, as with Twins fans. And it's funny you bring that up, Van, because I actually am amidst a startup draft. Is not really a dynasty league. It's more of a keeper league with a bunch of different industry folk. And Byron Buxton went off the board. It's a 13-team roto league. He went off the board at the 106th overall pick in the 9th round.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. You know, and it is a keeper league, but still, there's a long ways to go there. But anyway, I think that's going to wrap us up. Actually, one thing I wanted to mention before we go, I lied. Just a couple rookies that I think bear watching. We kind of like to throw out some names for the real deep league guys that are out there. Some of the prospects that I think are going to make or at least have a chance to make an impact this year. Roman Quinn, I think he's sort of a one-trick pony as far as the steals, but I think he'll see Philadelphia at some point this year. So if you're in a really deep league, you can stash him. Lewis Brinson is one of the real big-name ones that we could see this year. And then Jesse Winker hasn't shown very well in the minor leagues, especially as far as power goes. But
wrist issues.
Yeah, and there's going to be some playing time opportunities, I think, there in Cincinnati. So you could see him later this year, and he's a hitting machine. He's an on base machine. So especially on base leagues, I would look at him. And then I wrote this down and then put a question mark: Charlie Tilson. I'm trying to talk myself into him being valuable because of steals, but I don't know if I can really do it.
Well, I like Tilson well as a nice cheap end of the draft type of a guy. But now he's got the leg issues, and you wonder, is he really going to hold on to a job all year? Plus, I mean, I'm projecting him for 20 steals, 6 home runs, meh batting average. So it's like he's a perfect example of a guy, yeah, at the end of the draft, but no more than that, because his upside is not too high. We don't know how much playing time he's going to get, and yeah, right. That's it. So remember him in AL-only league and maybe the last round of your mixed draft, but that's about it.
Yeah, a poor man's Roman Quinn, really. I think that's it. We're gonna get out of here. Mike, if you want to, just go ahead and let us know everywhere. Eat some pretzels. We can ship you some pretzels if you want. Dots Pretzels, they are the finest pretzels in all of the land.
They're amazing.
They are. I sent some to Van. We don't live anywhere near each other, so I use the trusty United States Postal Service who sends me my paychecks. So I got there, and they are delicious. So, let us know everything that you got going on, where we can find you.
So you can find me on Fangraphs on the Rotographs blog, and then you can also find out all about my ebook, Projecting X 2.0, How to Forecast Baseball Player Performance, on projectingx.com. And if you don't have the time to project players yourself, then you can buy my 2017 pod projections that will be done all for you, and you don't have to do a thing except download them and win your league. So there you go. Everything at projectingx.com for all of your needs for the year.
I didn't know it was that simple this whole time.
So easy.
Jeez. All right, Van, what do you got going on?
Well, I want to do a quick plug on, let me get my stuff out of the way. Twitter, at Manly Van Lee. You can find my website, which is BootuInc.com, BOOTUINC.com. I write about baseball, garbage, politics, you name it, it's on there. And then finally, my podcast, The Backup Catcher, which I co-host with my friend Brian Vaughn. We finally, after 3 years, got the website up and running. So you can find us at backupcatcher.com, where you can even find links to the Nasty Cast and a section called Pals, where we talk about Nathan Hawken. Of other good stuff. So that's up and running. Check us out there. We're going to record tomorrow, so we'll have an episode up in a few days, and you'll see some weekly garbage talk, basically.
Glorious. All right. Yes. And I, again, wanted to endorse Mike's projections. It's fantastic fun, especially if you're there are people that do projections anyway. And if you're not utilizing his Projecting X, you're just missing out. You're dumb. That's all there is to say. And obviously, everything that you write, Mike, is just tremendous, and I look forward to reading every one of your articles as soon as I see it up. So I appreciate all the work that you've done throughout the years and will continue to do. So with that, I suppose you can find my work at Fantistics. I'm also going to be starting to write with Nate Miller, John Impamba, Colby Conway, who's on next week over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports. So look out for that, and you can just follow me on Twitter. I'll tweet all the links for all that good crap. With that, I suppose we'll get out of here. Until next week, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.